This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 804, brought to you by Mac Weldon. For 20% off your first order, visit macweldon.com/iFanboy. Enter promo code iFanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands, who are wearing the mask, they're getting vaccinated, they're drinking water, you're getting exercise, maybe you're getting a booster shot, doing stretches. Just keep it tight.
Come a man from the start. We don't know why he goes so far and keep on marching along. His drum, clubs and sticks and bats and balls for nuclear dicks with their dialect drawls that come from a parking lot town where nothing lives in the sun. Don't make me a target. Don't make me a target.
Hello, welcome to my Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 104. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Ryan Haupt.
Hello, everybody.
And Josh Flanagan is on assignment.
And
we don't know where.
He will not rest. No, I
don't even
know
what that means.
Well,
he just said, I'm on assignment, and he left.
He told me that I was his handler, and that only I could bring him in from the cold. So we'll see.
Josh is never getting over the Berlin Wall, by the way. We are a fanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks the one they like the best. We'll call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, along with other books from the week, to the patron pick, and hopefully a listener mail if we have time. But mostly, we try to have fun so you can have fun. It's all fun on this limited amount of time we have on the spinning globe in
this
space.
Pale blue dot.
Here's your spoiler warning. There'll be some of those. Exercise some caution. This week, Ryan, you had the pick.
There's the error in the script. The pick of the week this week was Aquaman, Green Arrow, Deep Target, number one. Story by Brandon Thomas, art and inks by Ronan. How do you think we say this last name? Cliquet?
Cliquet? I don't know. It depends on what part of the world he's from.
We need the Francophone Josh here Cliquet. For help Cliquet. With that one.
I mean, if it was French, that's supposed to be it. Be it but.
Colors by, I think this name would be pronounced Ulysses, which is awesome. Ulysses Ariola yeah. Palomera, and lettered by Josh Reed. Did you read this book, Connor?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so this book, I'd seen it advertised in some other DC books, and I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of a fun matchup of Aquaman and Green Arrow. And like the way the cover is drawn, it kind of highlights some of the similarities in their costume design, which is something I never picked up on before. And obviously they're both like blonde dudes with facial hair. And It turns out that all of those sort of similarities that I hadn't really noticed before were integral to the story, because this is someone has messed up the timeline and somehow Green Arrow is living Aquaman's life and Aquaman is living Green Arrow's life. And
yeah. So I had the same reaction you did. I saw this on the list. I thought, well, that's a weird team up. And I don't know, in my decades of reading comics and in the decades more of their existence, I don't know that we've ever had a solo Aquaman Green Arrow team up story.
Yeah. It would surprise me if we had.
These guys are, you know, foundational Justice League members, and
right.
I don't know that these guys have ever had like a solo adventure, but just the two of them. Look, maybe there was like a 1970s Brave and the Bold comic I missed, but I was like, I don't think I've ever seen a story where Aquaman and Green Arrow came up. That's interesting, you know. Yeah, after all these years, we found a new pairing, And so that was my first foray into reading this. And then Brandon Thomas is someone who's exciting, I think. He wrote Excellence at Image. So this is his second pick of the week. And he wrote a bunch of stories in the Batman or Gotham, Urban Gotham Knights, whatever that anthology book is. And
I just, awesome. I thought the opening sequence in this really kind of hooked me because it's this group of villainous looking people waiting for what I presume is, you know, the Watchtower or a Justice League satellite to be out, you know, out of sync with where they are on the world. So they can very quickly assemble a cosmic treadmill and pull some stuff in from the past and then disassemble it before the satellite comes back around. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. I just thought as a premise of, you know, how villains have to operate in a world where something as omnipresent and powerful as the Justice League exists, the sort of hoops they have to jump through was neat. And then the fact that it has this weird effect on the timeline where Aquaman and Green Arrow are switched places. They got mixed up, just like Landshark and Sea Bear.
Right. So that's the big twist here is that, you know, it opens with Green Arrow putting on a suit, an underwater suit, like a jetpack, and he jumps into the water.
One of his helpers says, like, good luck, Mr. Queen. And he's like, don't call me that. And you're like, oh, that's interesting.
And I guess he doesn't care about his arrows being wet.
Well, he's got two sets of arrows. He's got like regular arrows, but then he's got arrows with little propellers on the
which
on the
I thought back. Was cool. I thought that was cool.
So stupid.
Yeah, because at some point an arrow's flying through the ocean. I was like, well, that can happen.
And then, but it's got a little...
then I noticed there was propellers in the back of them, which I think...
Yeah, I'm glad they thought about it.
Look, in a world where he has boxing glove arrows, I feel like propeller arrows is logical progression.
And what is your, so this is not meant to be an aside, but what is your experience with archery and swimming? I guess the two Olympic sports represented by these characters.
Well, I've done a lot of swimming and I've only done archery at summer camp at junior high school.
Okay. So I consider myself something of an archer. I have a bow. Mm-hmm. I have a 55-pound takedown recurve bows. And
do you have any propeller arrows?
I don't have any propeller. I don't have any trick arrows to speak of.
Can you really call yourself an archer if you don't have propeller arrows?
That's a good question. Well, I've never brought my bow underwater. I think that would be very bad for the bowstring. But and also Green Arrow here is using a compound bow, which is not typically Green Arrow is usually a longbow guy. So this is a different style bow than he typically uses.
So he goes to Atlantis and, you know, confronts Aquaman on the throne, and that's when we find out that they have somehow switched. Is it bodies or places or it's not places,
and it's not bodies either because like they switched last names, so he's Oliver Curry, the Aquaman King of Atlantis, but he still has Oliver Queen's hair and facial hair.
Right.
And it's
his goatee and short hair,
and it's Arthur Queen, who is now Green Arrow. He still has the beard and long hair, presumably the Jason Momoa tattoos underneath, because that's important
right.
now.
Of course, branding, synergy.
And yeah, Green Arrow, or Oliver...
This is very confusing. I think we should refer to them as the costumes they're wearing for right now.
Okay, so Mixed Up Aquaman has all of Aquaman's powers, but it's clear from the text of the story that he hasn't had those powers for as long as Arthur Curry did. Yeah. So he's still getting used to having these powers, which suggests that whatever situation they're in is... new, which is makes it unclear like how did the timeline getting mixed up cause this to happen in such a way where, you know, Green Arrow having Aquaman's powers is a new situation for him to be in. But the reveal at the end, which was kind of a weird note to end on, but basically the villain we've been watching this entire time having like weird time travel adventures somehow got his DNA merged with the dinosaur.
Right, because in the beginning they were bringing little dinosaurs in from the past, and then he was shooting them, which was mean. And then, you know, doing tests on their DNA or whatever. So something happened, and now he's part dinosaur.
Which,
and Aquaman's
on.
Part Green Lantern. Green Arrow. And Green Arrow's part Aquaman.
I mean,
it was a big old silly mess.
I
enjoyed it. I thought this was fun. And, you know, DC right now is all about... I'm not saying this is out of continuity, but, you know, it basically is. DC is all about, you know... the multiverse. That's
right.
DC. That's their corporate mantra right now. So there's a lot more stories at DC taking place outside of their normal continuity. And I think you might as well use it as a place to experiment and have a good time and say, what happens if you team up Aquaman and Green Arrow? What happens if they are they're body swapped, sort of, and what happens if they both think the other one did it, and what happens if you've got two guys who are basically the hotheads of the Justice League who are at each other's throats, you know, in the absence of Hawkman, which was a traditional foil for Green Arrow, you've got Aquaman, and it works.
It tapped into the good old superhero comics trope of the two heroes meet to team up, but they have to fight first.
Yeah.
And it was good.
It was fun, and it was unexpected, and I liked reading it.
And I had a huge stack of books this week, so, you know, it was sort of, I was fishing around to figure out what the pick might be, and I had a few, so I know it's talked about often on the show, like, what order we read the books in. I'm chaotic when it comes to the order I read my books in. It's literally just like, oh, what, did I have an errant thought about Daredevil? I guess I'll go read Daredevil. I don't have any of this, like, this is what I'm looking forward to the most.
Mm-hmm.
And a series I've been figuring out how much I enjoy is MOM, Mom, Mother of Madness, number 3, story by Amelia Clark. Yes, that Amelia Clark, Daenerys, Mother of Dragons, Stormborn, Breaker of Chains. Yeah. And Marguerite Bennett, art by Layla Lays and Layla DeLuca, colors by Trona Farrell, and letters by Haley Rose Lyon. Have you been reading this series, Connor?
No. Mm-mm.
It's okay. So it's an, I remember seeing, I follow Amelia Clark on Instagram because she's actually quite funny and charming and delightful.
Sure.
I don't follow a ton of celebrities on Instagram, but she's one of the ones that I actually think is a good follow. And she announced that she was doing this book a while back, and the level of passion she exhibited when talking about this comic book that she'd been working really hard on, struck me as interesting, because like, mm-hmm. it's not new for a celebrity to want to do a comic book, but sure. I felt that like the investment that she had demonstrated in this character, in this idea, warranted some attention. And I would say this is similar to like a Maneaters, in that it's a book that's commenting a lot on society, and in particular how our society treats women. Mm-hmm. And the main character of this series is a woman who's has superpowers that are activated by her hormones. So when she feels like scared, she turns invisible. When she feels angry, she gets super strong. So she's sort of like, what, you know, she has like a physical manifestation of the sort of thing that's driving that right. emotional state that she's sure. in. And it's basically her going up against a pharmaceutical company that wants to sort of weaponize that ability in her for money. So it has a lot to say about late stage capitalism and the way we treat women and the way we expect women to like regulate their emotions to serve society rather than take care of themselves and their families. And it just, I won't say too much more. Go ahead.
Are you enjoying it?
These are all longer issues, and issue number 3 was the final issue. And I would say at the end of it, yes, I did enjoy it. The first issue suffers from some of the same issues we see with a lot of first time comic writers, where I texted you yesterday that there was, you know, I was having a bit of a slog, and it's because it's too heavy. They put too much text on the page. It takes too long to get to the point. But the second and third issue, I think it found its stride in a way that I found quite enjoyable. And I think, it was a nice little, it'll be an interesting little 3-issue volume to, return to and reconsider. And I'll be curious to see if Amelia Clark continues to do comics, because it seems like she really did care about this character and care about this idea. And I thought she did a good job in actually pursuing it and putting out a worthwhile product.
So this is the final issue?
Yes.
And who published it?
Image published it.
Right. Okay. DC versus Vampires, number 1, first issue of a 12-issue miniseries. And now DC is chasing the deceased dragon. So,
which we knew they would.
Absolutely, because deceased was a huge hit out of nowhere. And so, and I'm not against this at all. Just, this is just set up for what this book is.
I mean, yeah.
And, you know, why not? Let's see. Let's try. Right. And, we got another book coming out next week from Tom Taylor, where we got DC Fantasy. Now we have this book is DC versus Vampires. And it's, at first I was like, well, I'm not so into that, like, as a concept. I'm not against it, but I'm also not, doesn't excite me. Yeah. And then I saw the creative team. This is written by James Tynion IV and Matthew Rosenberg. I suspect it's plotted by Tynion and Rosenberg, and Rosenberg's scripting it, but I don't have that proof of that. And Otto Schmidt's on the art team, and I was like, well, fuck, because I like Rosenberg a lot. I love Otto Schmidt. He's one of my favorite new artists. They together did that Hawkeye Freefall book. That was one of my favorite Marvel books the year that was coming out.
That was a good book.
So I said, okay, I got to try this. And I really liked it. It's not super compelling out the door.
Agreed.
Did you read this?
I did.
Okay, you did read this. Okay. But I liked looking at it. And I think what's fun about these stories, the same way that with Deceased, is that anything can happen. So I'm not fully on board the way I was after the first issue of Deceased, but I did really enjoy it. The main thrust here is the eye vampire character shows up at the Hall of Justice looking for help. He's been attacked and he's trying to warn them that there's going to be a war. The vampires are going to come for humanity. And he's being talked to by Hal Jordan and Zan of the Wonder Twins. And he reveals that he went to the Legion of Doom and they're all dead or turned into vampires. And then with the big reveal is that Hal has already turned into vampire, so he kills the vampire.
He creates a giant green energy blender and kills Zan. Yeah.
That was pretty rough.
That drinks him from a Green Lantern mug, which I'm just like, okay, wait, hang on. Is there nothing like? I know it was canon for a while that you couldn't use a Green Lantern ring to kill anybody. I think that's since changed. Hashtag defund the Green Lanterns. But right. So like, can the Green Lantern ring not change its mind of like, oh, turns out you're now a vampire and a bad person, I'm going to abandon you and find a new, you know, host.
It's a fine line to walk with the Green Lantern ring. I don't like it to be too sentient.
Okay.
You know, there's a whole thing now where it's like a character.
It talks to
it. I don't like that at all. It's a tool. Right. And it can sense if you're dead, and then it leaves you to find a new host or a new, you know.
But
whatever.
He is dead. But, he's a vampire.
I mean, what is dead?
I gotcha.
He's
I got gotcha.
Consciousness. He's walking and talking.
Admit it.
But you're right. Putting the reveal when he reveals he's a vampire and he puts Zan into a giant blender and then blends him and says, "Usually I prefer fresh blood, but on special occasions I don't mind a smoothie." I was like, "Well, that's fucked up."
Yeah.
And then, you know, the big, you know, the cliffhanger is that Batman gets the letter from the eye vampire character with, along with Lex Luthor's blood, who was he wasn't a vampire, was he? He was just dying. I don't remember.
Yeah, I lost the thread a little bit.
I didn't love this, but I did really like looking at it, and I'm willing to keep going with it. And I trust Rosenberg and to a certain extent Tinian, and Schmidt is terrific. And, you know, I'll see. I'm just not, you know, I'm not in love with the idea conceptually of vampires. I'm more excited about next week's book, the Tom Taylor fantasy series. So I just
but are
like...
You are you sticking with this?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with it for at least a little while. I just like that DC's taking these kind of swings with their characters. Like, okay, we're just going to do these big out-of-continuity stories, and hopefully they work. And this is, they're not like they're putting, you know, this is good talent on here, so...
Yeah.
I'm hopeful that the first issue was just kind of like a setup and it gets sort of moving in the second and third issue, you know, issues beyond that. But it was fun. It just wasn't great.
Yeah, I'll keep reading it too. Now, I know you have a fraught relationship with the next book here, Robin number 7, story by Josh Williamson, art by Gleb Melnikov and Max Dunbar, colors by Luis Guerrero.
And it's not fraught, I just don't read it.
Letters by ALW's Troy Petter. Petery. It's got a petery flavor. Okay, so you're not reading this. Robin is still involved in this tournament of fighters.
Yeah, Fight Club.
Which, you know, it's interesting that, like, we're on issue 7 and this first arc is still going. So that's kind of actually kind of cool because I am enjoying the way they're exploring this concept. And it turns out the island they're on has basically been, like, deeply saturated with Lazarus Pit juice. I think that's the only way I can explain it succinctly. So it functions a little bit like the island on Lost, where the island itself has needs and wants and desires, but mostly what it desires is death, because a Lazarus Pit is something you put dead people in to bring them back. And so this tournament, you know, the fighting tournament, everyone is fighting to the death, including, you know, Robin, Damian. And he has to kill people in the course of this tournament, and the island is supposed to bring them back to life. But it turns out the reveal in this issue is that this tournament is being run by Ra's al Ghul. All right, so hang on. Are we saying Ra's al Ghul now, or are we still saying Ra's al Ghul?
Ra's. That's what almost every media portrayal of him but one so uses
but
Ross,
that's the
so.
One that I got to know first is the Bruce Timm cartoon. So okay, so it's the tournament is being run by Ra's al Ghul's mother, Rul al Ghul, who would make that person Damien's great grandmother. So that was kind of a cool reveal. Like it, you know, was a little unexpected. She's got this book that's like the Book of Lazarus, which is not a real book from the Bible and is in this weird language. And the issue ends with Robin unsurprisingly being the final, one of the final two combatants in this tournament. And next issue, he's going to have to fight Connor Hawk, Green Arrow's son, which they keep saying is like one of the best fighters in the DC universe. I've never really bought into that, if I'm being perfectly honest. Maybe it's just never been justified to my satisfaction, but I've been enjoying this series. It kind of moves at a very rollicking clip, and it's fun to put Robin in a situation that he is both seemingly purpose made for, but has to be resistant to at the same time. So it's like, obviously he's been trained his entire life by a League of Assassins and then Batman. So he is perfectly capable of winning a fighting tournament to the death. But at the same time, his code is, you know, he's supposed to not kill people and be involved in that kind of stuff. I think the only thing that doesn't quite work for me about this series at the moment is, you know, how old is Damien supposed to be? He's supposed to be like 10.
Yeah, who knows, around there.
And I just...
I think at some point it was called out, but I forgot already what it was.
I just don't know. Like, I don't want to fight a child, but I feel like if you put me in the ring with a 10-year-old, I'm not... Like, could they really beat me up? Like, maybe they could. I don't know. But it just... That strains credulity a little bit, I think.
One trained since birth to
yeah, but he's
kill.
Like... 90 pounds soaking wet, like, you know, fighting like giant bruisers. I just, to me, that part strange credulity
I think if I recall, and I could be wrong and people can correct me, I think they aged him up a little bit where he's a teenager, like a young teenager now.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm actually enjoying the series quite a bit. I'm having fun with it. You know, like Damien has to put himself in situations where like, somebody, a person he's fighting throws him strategically so that he can like steal a book from the woman running the tournament and learn some more info. So like he has to like fake not being as good at the fights and then finish the fight. And I don't know. I love a kung fu movie. This is kind of scratching that itch. So I'm enjoying it.
Do you enjoy hurting me?
No, but if it's going to entertain the viewers, I think that's what we have to do. And I know they're
so
not viewers,
Moon Knight,
but...
Moon Knight number 4. Are you reading Moon Knight?
This is one of the books I wanted to get caught up on this week, and I didn't. I failed.
I really enjoyed this book. This is Jed McKay and Alessandro Capuccio, and
I am also enjoying it. I just have not read this issue.
Sure. I caught up in the last two this week because I missed when I was at that wedding a month ago. I really like this. I mean, I know Moon Knight is a strange character, and I don't necessarily entirely love suited Moon Knight.
Mr. Knight.
But, you know, he gets to play with all of his identities here. He's partially suited when he's doing with the public, but then when he's out in adventures, he's in the classic Moon Knight outfit, which I love so much. But what I really liked about this issue in particular was that Tigra shows up at his office, and Tigra and Moon Knight were both West Coast Avengers together, so they have a history of being friends, and she treats him in the way that an old college buddy would. If they showed up at your place, it'd be like, doesn't take your shit, makes fun of you, knew you way back when. And so they have it's a really fun sort of, she's not undermining him, but she keeps trying to be all broody and Moon Knighty, and she's like, come on. And I just love Tigra as a character. She's hardly ever used.
I was gonna say, she hasn't been around for a while.
Much more popular when I was a kid in the 80s, but I loved her. I loved her on the Avengers. I loved the West Coast Avengers. We talked about them a lot on the show. And it was just a fun little team-up issue where it still continues the story that's been going on, but she shows up and helps, and it allows them to have a really heartfelt heart-to-heart conversation at the end, and he lets his guard down with her, and it was really, really nice. I thought this was a really terrific issue. I don't know what my pick would have been this week, but this would have definitely been in the conversation. And again, Jed McKay right now he's living in that Gashi area that we've talked about a lot with his books. You know, he really gets that Marvel, that classic Marvel vibe, and apparently also the classic Marvel characters.
Yeah, he's quickly become someone, if I see his name on a book, I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, and I always try to read Moon Knight books, and they succeed to various degrees, or they fail to various degrees, and they never last too long. But, you know, now that Oscar Isaac's playing him on a TV show, maybe it'll last longer this time.
He's very good looking.
I don't need to hear any more about how good looking he is in this house.
I think there are many households that are in the same conversation right now, Connor.
And he can sing and dance. I get it. So let's take a quick break and talk about Mack Weldon. Ryan, you're a busy guy. I mean, that's pretty well established. Even people who don't know you personally will probably understand that from listening to you describe your life. You're a busy guy. So maybe it's time to stop thinking about what to wear and just embrace the radically efficient Mack Weldon Daily Wear System. The Daily Wear System is a selection of clothes rooted in smart design, made with performance fabrics and built to work together. From breathable t-shirts and polos to stylish button-ups and shorts, underwear and beyond, Mack Weldon makes it easy for you to dress for work, leisure, and play, or whatever, or wherever your day takes you. So I've been talking about this before the show. It's cooling down now in Los Angeles, finally, although we had a couple of spurts of heat as summer tries to hold on. But I've been able to finally break up my Mack Weldon Ace sweatpants, which at first I couldn't find, and I was starting to panic, but I found them the other day, and I had my very first official Mack Weldon Ace sweatpant day, and it was terrific. They're really great, functional, stylish sweatpants, and I love them. And I have all kinds of other great products. I like the Radius pant as well. The Radius is sort of like an all-weather pant. It's you know, you can wear it to the store and not feel like you're slumming it. And you can wear it hiking, which Josh does. They're really, you know, functional and versatile pants. And that's the great thing about Mack Weldon products is they last forever. I had these pants for years, and they show no sign of slowing down. And they look great too. So you can focus on things that matter when you're not worrying about what you're trying to wear, which is, you know, great for all of us. And what's also great is the clothes are designed to work together. So for the ultimate lazy Sunday, you know, wear some Ace sweat shorts with modern tailoring, and they pair perfectly with the ultra soft, ultra upgraded Pima tees. And for weekend travel, both far and near, the silver knit polo and Radius shorts are the perfect high tech, highly packable combo. So there's all kinds of great products at MackWeldon.com. We've been talking about them for years. You know it. We know it. Go check them out. If you haven't had your first order yet, if you haven't taken the plunge, for 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com/iFanboy. And use promo code iFanboy. That's MackWeldon.com/iFanboy. Promo code iFanboy for 20% off your first order. Mack Weldon, radically efficient wardrobing. Who doesn't like that?
It's radical.
Mm-hmm. Jupiter's Legacy. I'm very curious to talk to you about this book.
Yeah, Jupiter's Legacy, Requiem, number 5. Story by Mark Miller, art by Matthew Dow Smith, color by Giovanna Nero, letters by John Workman. So are you reading this, Connor?
Yes.
Do you know what's happening?
No.
I don't know what's happening either.
I mean, I actually liked this issue. This has been my favorite one of the 5 so far. And I'm reading this, and I asked myself why, and I think it's because, A, I'm subscribed to it on Comixology, so it just keeps showing up. But but B, you know, I loved the first two Jupiter's Legacy
miniseries.
I loved them. And so I was so excited to get the final chapter, and I don't know what is going on. And I talked about this when the first issue came out, but there was such a long break between miniseries, and Miller here didn't do anything to help us out with that. You know, we did it. It's a time jump, mm-hmm. which makes it even worse. So I'm like, wait, do I know these characters? Are these different characters? Because a lot of the characters are in different places in their lives. They're older. They're doing different things. I'm like, I don't know what is happening. So I've been holding on as best I could. The story, I think, has involved, you know, one of the characters finding this alien race who called for help. She's brought them to Earth to do a little, you know, meet and greet, and she's gathering all of the heroes of Earth to go back to this planet to help save this race of people.
Right.
And here it turns out it was all a ruse, and they are intent on invading Earth, and so they've managed to trick all the heroes to come to their planet so they can kill them there and then have clear path to Earth. So I get that.
I mean, I'll finish this out just because it feels silly not to, but this series, the Requiem part of this saga, is not working for me on nearly any level other than Mark Miller's writing is brisk enough that I know it's not going to take me too long to get through an issue.
And I like Matthew Dow Smith's art. I just don't think it's working in this book.
It's got like John Paul Leone vibes.
Which, it definitely has John Paul Leone vibes, which is great. But like, you know, the first series was Frank Quitely. The second series was Alfredo Torres. And it's just, it doesn't.
It's too big a departure from the style of the universe that I got used to, which,
it's a bummer. It's a real bummer because when those books came out before, they were almost always in the discussion for Pick of the Week. And
yeah,
and it's a bummer.
The Walking Dead Deluxe number 25. I assume you're not reading this because you don't read indie books unless you know they're going to finish, right?
So what is this? This is the recolored one, right?
This is the recolored one. Okay. I don't have much to say about this because obviously I've read it before. I reread issue 25, I couldn't tell you, you know, I couldn't remember exactly what had happened in issue 25 from the last time I read this book. Part of me was hoping that this was going to be one of the major bombshell issues of The Walking Dead so I can make this pick of the week and really, really upset some folks. But that wasn't the case. This issue was perfectly fine. The reason I'm enjoying this series is that I actually don't think the colors serve the story particularly well. I think as an experiment, obviously, I think you and I both understand why this book is coming out, but and that
yeah,
that
but like you read this before, registers. Right?
Yeah, multiple times. This is not even my first reread of the entire series.
So I'm just confused.
I still enjoy it. So I'm, you know, it's October. It's the spookiest of months. So, you know,
was this a random pickup or have you been reading this the whole time?
I've started rereading this when they started putting out the deluxe issues. I've been rereading it the entire time. It's fun to, it's fun to have a book that, you know, you enjoy come out again in a different, slightly different tweaked format. And the thing that I think keeps me invested is at the back of the issues, Kirkman has been doing some reflections. So he has, he includes a scan of the handwritten plan that he had for each issue. So he always has like a single page of blank white paper and he just numbers it 1 to 22 for each page and then just kind of jotted down his ideas for what the beat by beat for each page was supposed to be originally when he thought of it.
Right.
And so that's usually interesting to think about in the context of how the issue actually ends up coming out. And then the following page of that, he like writes some reflection on like what he was thinking about when he did this issue or things that he now realizes he could have done differently. A lot of that discussion is like how his treatment of the female characters works in a more modern context. And yeah, it's just kind of cool to, it's cool to see a creator reflect back on their own seminal work in real time and see what lessons they've learned along the way in doing so. And I've been enjoying that.
Well, that's certainly interesting.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention Spine Tingling Spider-Man number 1, written by Saladin Ahmed with art by Juan Ferreira. And this is a book on Marvel Universe's Infinity line. So Marvel Universe is Marvel's app that, you can subscribe to and read comics on with a 6-month delay. And they have their original line of Infinity comics. And the Infinity comics are produced as the kids like to read comics these days, is what I'm told, is in an infinite scroll, much like Webtoons books are. And I've only read a couple of those Batman Webtoons books.
Wasn't that a Scott McCloud thing back in the day, too?
Oh, I don't remember.
I feel like Scott McCloud had some notion of the infinite scrolling comic in the early days of comics on the internet. So might not just be the kids.
Well, now that we have iPads and phones, you know, we can scroll. And, you know, we can have the debate about what's a comic and what's not a comic and what makes a comic, what doesn't make a comic. And that's a debate for another time. But I'll just say this. This book was flipping beautiful. Juan Ferreira is quickly becoming someone who I'm really excited to see. He really, really came to our attention with that Thunderbolts miniseries. And I've seen him pop up since then. And I didn't know he was drawing this. And I'm scrolling through this issue going, who is this artist? This is incredible. And then I get to the end and I was like, of course. It's Juan Ferreira. And it's a simple story. Peter's having a nightmare. And so they get to play with this form. It works less well when it's just a bunch of scrolling panels going by, but when they really play with the idea of movement or characters moving within a single environment. So like, you know, at one point Spider-Man's swinging through the city and the background is continuous, but Spider-Man moves through it in separate pieces. Or at one point, Spider-Man's crawling down a wall towards us, and that works really well when you're scrolling. So when they're able to play with that stuff, it's really cool. Again, when it's just panels going by, I find it less interesting. But, you know, Peter Parker's having a nightmare. It's fucking up his day. It's fucking up his life. He's trying to figure out why and what's going on. And it was a fun little Spider-Man story, and it was just really, really gorgeous if you're at all a fan of Juan Ferreira and if you're on Marvel Universe. And I know a lot of our listeners are.
Yeah.
We have a really good, really big portion of our listenership is on Marvel Unlimited and DC and DC Universe.
Yeah, Marvel. I did not. I did not. This. Yeah, I did not see this one, so I'm gonna have to check this out. I'm excited to.
Yeah, it's really gorgeous. If you haven't taken the plunge yet and checked out any of these Infinity books, which I hadn't until this point, this is a great one to start with. Spine tingling Spider-Man number one, and it's not a one shot. It continues going, so I'll be keeping my eye out for the next issue. It was a lot of fun to read, and again, we'll have the debate another time about what this means and what it is. But I enjoyed cool. it.
Once in Future number 21, story by Kieran Gillen, art by Dan Mora, color by Tamra Bonvillain, and letters by Ed Dukeshire, who definitely sounds like the name of a person who should be lettering this book, right?
Yeah.
I think you and I have talked about this book. Okay.
Yeah. I dropped this book, I think, after the first arc. Like, I enjoyed the first arc. I enjoyed especially the beginning of this book a lot. And then I just, as often happens with Kieran Gillen books, is I eventually was like, I don't think I know what has happening anymore. And
well, I can report in that I also do not know what is happening, but I have decided that I am a big enough fan of Dan Mora's art that I'm going to stick with it for as long as I possibly can.
Dan Mora is great. He's been also drawing Detective Comics and while also doing this book somehow.
Yeah. So in this issue, the team of, and like Duncan Rose and Duncan's grandma, whose name I can't remember, they have to go to Bath, which is where Rose's parents are. And the whole of the UK has been transported to this other world. So they now live in like this place with very dangerous and chaotic magic, where the stories of old are coming to life and wreaking havoc. And so Bath is being terrorized by a male Gorgon who's turning people into stone, much like a Medusa. Mm. But there's also this knight running around. And so like the team is trying to rescue Rose's parents, not get looked at by this Gorgon, and also avoid getting killed by this knight. So it's kind of just a rollicking all over the place issue that has some disturbing twists and turns. Basically, they trick the knight into being like, hey, knight, there's a monster in here and it turns you to stone if you look at it. And so the knight claws his own eyes out and then comes and kills the monster. And you're just like, holy crap, that's intense.
So do you like this book?
I do. I do like this book. It's I kind of just let it wash over me. The big the big sort of meta threat right now is that we've got the King Arthur of old Britain, right? Like an actual Breton where like the Saxons right. are invaders yep. that he has to yep. kill. And now we have the Norman version of King Arthur. So now there's like this French King Arthur who's vying for power against the old Breton King Arthur.
I mean, it's all interesting. And that's what I liked about it originally was it, you know, it looks at history and, mm-hmm. you know,
stories
it has something to say about the ridiculousness of xenophobia and hating immigrants because everyone is literally an immigrant sometime and at some point the people who consider them British now were immigrants.
And at one point, like Beowulf is running around and it's all
interesting and it has great historical fun and it's, you know, fantasy like, and I liked the beginning, but then after a while, I was like, I think this is good. I've had like my story. I don't need it to go on forever. And that's where I was with it.
And I'm still going with it just because, like I said, really like Dan Mora's art. I'm mm-hmm. getting enough pieces of the story out of it that I'm still enjoying it. And I will plan on sticking with it as long as I can.
Star Wars Corner. My favorite corner of all the corners.
Star Wars, Darth Vader, number 17, story by Greg Pak, art by
You were hoping you'd have Josh on your side for this, weren't you?
Anko, not really. Colors by Alex Sinclair, letters by VCs Joe Carmagna. Because I don't know that Josh is still reading. So I'm only reading two Star Wars books.
He's reading Darth Vader, I think.
I'm only reading Darth Vader and the main Star Wars book, and I was really enjoying Darth Vader. I think this, much like many books in my life these days, they're trying to do a crossover called War of the Bounty Hunters, and I'm trying to do everything I can to avoid paying attention to that, and it has messed up this book enough that I'm not following it super well at this point, and I'm hoping that this crossover ends before my interest
can wax, you just skip the completely. Crossover issues and come on when it's over.
I mean, I guess I could, but this was the Star Wars book that came out this week, and I want my corner. So there was no Power Rangers book for Power Corner, so I couldn't do Power Rangers Corner, which would have been my preference, but so I had to do Star Wars Corner. And yeah, I'm still enjoying this enough. I really like Greg Pak. I think he's a strong writer. And like I said in a previous Star Wars corner, that like I think Darth Vader works as a Star Wars comic for me better than many other characters because his face is a helmet. So They haven't lost me yet, but War of the Bounty Hunters needs to end. So I can
how is this to tying into War of the Bounty Hunters?
I don't know, because I'm not reading any of the other. I couldn't tell you.
In this issue, what's tying into it? Like, what's happening?
In this issue, Ochi, who's become like Vader's right-hand man, is trying to take out a guild, some members of his own Assassin's Guild. Luke is running away from Vader in his X-Wing because he recognizes that he is not ready to face Vader one-on-one, and Vader is having to decide between saving the Executizer, what's the name of his giant Star Destroyer? From an attack by some rebellious Hutts. And so it's sort of Vader having to choose between pursuing his own interests in chasing Luke and pursuing the interests of the Empire. And it leads to a moment where Vader's ship gets exploded and he has to use the Force to create like a metal cocoon around him to then crash on a planet. And I don't know. I like how this book consistently just makes Vader this unstoppable force of nature that just can't be stopped, can't be killed. Tons of people in the Empire are working against him, and they even think they're doing so at the behest of the Emperor, but Vader just never, and obviously this is in between movies, so we know that at the start of the next movie, Vader's still got to be top dog, and it's kind of fun to watch Greg Pak figure out new and interesting ways to help to have Vader maintain his dominance within the Imperial structure. So yeah. In getting me to talk about this, you've made me realize I liked this more than I thought I did. So.
Well, there you go. That's my public service to you.
Yeah.
Those are the books we wanted to talk about, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, patrons can vote to add a book to the rundown. Every patron gets a vote this week. The patrons weren't quite sure. The votes got really spread around. A bunch of books. That's not words. Among a lot of books. And the winner was Batman, The Long Halloween Special, number one, from Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale, Brenna Wagner, and Richard Starkings.
Always nice when the patrons pick something that I was definitely going to read anyway. Thank you, patrons.
So, you know, we've had, it's Halloween. In fact, you're listening to this maybe on Halloween.
It's the spookiest month.
And we've had the Batman, The Long Halloween animated specials, part one and two. Ryan, did you watch part two?
No.
Okay. Well, we all, Ryan and I and Paul, the animation brain trust, did not like part one at all. Paul and I loved part two. Look, it's a great story, so it made for ultimately a fun animated experience. I mean, you've got to believe this is why this book is out, because I don't know why else to put this out. It didn't look. This is a lot of people's one of their favorite Batman stories, and I get it. But I finished reading this, and I thought, why did that just happen? Like, it didn't add anything to the Long Halloween story, and these things hardly ever do. When you return to a seminal story, a complete story with a updated special, even Darwin Cook's New Frontier special, it was fun, but it didn't add anything to the original story. This one I felt almost took something away from the original story, actually. And I felt like I liked looking at it. We never see Tim Sale anymore.
I know,
and that was great.
What a shame.
But you know, the way that the first story ended was really great. You know, Batman doesn't solve the case. He doesn't catch the killer. And only we know the truth, the reader. And I always love that as a storytelling device where, you know, you have more information than the hero does. And you can see the tragedy in it because you know what actually happened and they don't. And this just sort of upends all that and brings Glenda back. Glenda?
Yeah, Glenda.
Witch. She comes back and it's like, the fact that she was gone at the end of
Gilda,
the story.
Gilda.
Yeah, Glinda's a witch. It just felt like it sort of undermined the ending of the story, the original story, a little bit.
The book also does a thing that is in, I know you don't watch trailers, but it does a similar thing to the new Robert Pattinson Batman trailer where Batman gets shot with a gun and it's fine, as if we would expect that it wouldn't be like, and so it's this whole thing about like Alfred makes me wear a Kevlar vest now. And it's like, well, yeah, you're getting shot at all the time, but it's also right. Like,
that's not unusual though.
It's not unusual, but the way it's the movie trailer is more egregious in its offense than this, but it's like, people could just aim for your mouth. Like you still have an exposed face.
They don't though. That's the point. Like that's like, you know, there's all kinds of things that don't make sense, but that's the whole point of his outfit is that, I mean, it was more of a point when he had the yellow oval. The whole point of the yellow oval was to draw attention to his chest where the armor was. So like that, I saw people complaining about that in the trailer, which made me, which blew my mind because that's just normal Batman stuff. But
well, when you, but you haven't seen the trailer. The trailer, it's ridiculous in the trailer. It's like automated machine gun fire at close range and he doesn't flinch. Like he doesn't even, like you would still get knocked back. Like there's still, momentum exists even if you're wearing a bat suit.
Batman has defeated momentum, Ryan.
Well, then he should use it to, but again, he's not Iron Man. Like Iron Man literally does defeat momentum with the repulsors. Like that's one of, that was the whole thing that Warren Ellis introduced them as, this like momentumless technology. But like, if Batman could build an Iron Man suit, then why doesn't Batman have an Iron Man suit?
Maybe they're little 22 bullets. It doesn't matter. I also,
they were a little, in the comic they were, yeah.
I don't understand why this classic Batman story butchers Robin's costume so badly. I know that, I know people are sick of me complaining about costumes. I know people are sick of me complaining about Robin costumes, but this is really a bad version of the classic Robin suit. I don't know why.
But it's consistent with the sequel to Long Halloween where they introduced Robin in the first place.
Is it the same suit?
I think so. Yeah.
I haven't heard that in so long, but it's a bad version of it. That's
Dark Victory.
Also, yeah. If that's one of the Dark Victory, it's a bad one. That too. Yeah. Random stripes on his suit. He's not wearing a tunic. Well, his shirt's tucked into the belt. Like it doesn't, it's not a good design. What did you think overall? Cause I just felt like, look, it's fine. I enjoyed parts of it. It was, looked nice, but at the end of it, I was like, well, what did that add to the story? And it didn't.
I didn't think about it in terms of, I didn't even put it in that context of adding to the story. I just kind of read it as like, okay, here's a throwback issue of a Batman comic. You know, it's done in the style that Jeff Loeb was doing a lot of in that era where he was being very prolific. And so mm-hmm. I was just like, well, I love seeing Tim Sale draw anything, so I'm just going to read this and enjoy the Tim Sale art and pretend that it's 2002.
And right. I mean,
that's what I did.
I'm not someone who says it's going to ruin my look at Batman in Long Halloween, but it just, to me, it's like, well, why would you do that? Just tell a different story within that world. Don't bring the killer back who, you know, very famously escaped justice at the end. Like that to me changes everything. But it, I mean, I don't, me, I, in my own continuity. Yeah. But
I don't, like, have any plans to like reread Batman the Long Halloween. If I did, it's not like I would then go read this issue again afterwards. Like I was always planning on reading this because I will read anything Tim Sale draws, but I would say it is completely mentally disconnected from the idea of the original Long Halloween book for me in my mind.
Was it strange that Batman let Robin go trick-or-treating with Barbara Gordon?
Super strange, especially since like she was dressed as Batgirl, a thing her dad is not supposed to know she is.
Right. So this is like, well, that was always the, you know, that was her origin, was she was going to a Halloween costume and she'd made this Batgirl costume. It's just that her dad didn't see her in it.
Yeah.
So now how do you get around that? But
I did enjoy Gordon being not knowing who to call to fix the bat signal when Harvey Dent messed it up.
That was funny. No, there were definitely funny bits, good bits in here. There were great sequences that Bart legitimately made me laugh. He's like, I don't even know how to fix this thing. But I just finished it. I was like, well, I don't know why that had to happen. But you know, it's fine. Let's do ratings on Batman the Long Halloween Special number one. Ratings out of 5.
I liked this more than you did, so mm-hmm. I might go 3.75.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's lower than I thought you were going to go.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you...
That's fine, though. I'm not saying don't change your vote. I'm just, you know... I'm going to go 3 stars because, again, I like, you know, we never see Tim Sale. I like looking at his stuff, and there were bits I liked. But overall, if the Long Halloween is a 4.5 to 4.75 story, this is a 3, and just felt unnecessary.
Sticking with it.
I mean, if there was another issue, of course I'm gonna read it because of Tim Sale. Yeah, but
same.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown, but if you give at the $5 or higher level, you get your superpower live on the show, like Will Dick. Will Dick can at the time. At a time of great indecision or questioning, can convene a panel of Will Dicks to discuss the matter. The panel includes 10-year-old Will Dick, 16-year-old Will Dick, 25-year-old Will Dick. I don't know how old Will Dick is right now, but and so on and so forth. So he can convene a panel of his himself for the various points of his time to discuss whatever issue is pressing him. The panel of Will Dicks.
Panel Wills. Yeah. What happens after the discussion is over?
Well, then they go back to wherever they came from. The ether.
All right. Well, meet Doss. Can mark his territory.
Okay.
So
how?
I think the way most animals do it. I think urine can't is on the table. Can't
anyone do that?
Well, but him, like, I think when he does it, it's legally binding. Like, it's...
Oh.
If he... Yeah. So
he can legally mark his territory.
Yeah. Like, if he, you know, if he lets himself loose in your home, then that's his house now.
On the ground or in the toilet?
I think it has to be on the ground. Yeah, it can't be flushed away. It has to be, you know, it has to be marked.
If he pees in the bushes outside your house, it's now his territory.
Those bushes would be his territory, but I think it has to be done with intention. So it's not every time he pees, he takes ownership of that territory. Like, you know, animals, they pee both to relieve themselves and to mark their territory. So he has to consciously be in, like, this is a territory marking pee stream right now. And so...
what about if he pees on the side of a building in an alleyway?
Yeah, that's if
he the wants building that alley, is the territory his alley, or the alley, or the building?
The alley. It's sort of it follows sort of the rules of like magic, where like if he wants the building, he's got to be across the threshold of the building, vampire style. So
he can run into the office, into the lobby of an office building, and just start peeing in the office and everything.
And you know, like it the size of the building, I think like it can be pushed to its limits, right? Like if he tries to take over the Empire State Building just by crossing the threshold and peeing in the lobby, like it may not hold just because there's so many other people who've peed in that building. But if he really wanted
on the
it,
building,
maybe you don't know.
I used to work in there.
And you never,
what if he peed? What if he peed and walked around a building and just peed on the outside of it all the way?
I think that could have an effect. He's got to get some inside of the building across the threshold, but I think doing a perimeter sweep is not a bad call for meat.
Better start drinking meat. There's a lot of buildings in Manhattan. I think I have territory.
Stay hydrated. You know, and then he could. I mean, imagine you pee around one building and you can start collecting rent. The checks roll in.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's you can get your superpower live on the show, like Will and Meat. Thanks for being patrons. Hey, look, we have time for a listener mail.
Oh, I'm so excited for this one.
Bionic Dave from Los Angeles, California says, if Clark Kent sits behind the wheel of a car and puts it in neutral, can he simply stick his arm out the window, point it ahead, and fly the car forward?
Bionic Dave, I'm glad you asked. I've thought about this a lot. I am not joking. Here's the thing. I think the way it would have to work is he'd have to be, you know, pushing the car probably from the steering wheel. And I don't think most cars are built such that a steering wheel column could handle the force necessary to propel the entire car forward.
So he would crunch the column.
Right. So I think what Clark has probably done for his own car, because I think Clark probably does this all the time. I don't think he needs to stick his arm out, but I think if he
was my own addition. He didn't say that in email. Can he simply stick his arm out, point it ahead, and fly the car forward?
Yeah. So I think if Clark gets under the hood and reinforces the steering column with some extra metal that he could then, you know, like fuse to the frame of the car with his heat vision, he could totally do this. And in my headcanon, this is how Clark Kent drives around all the time. And I've thought this for a long time, because to me, there's no way Clark Kent would burn fossil fuels to move himself from place to place when he could do it himself with his solar powered superpowers.
So he just sits in the car and holds the steering wheel and flies it forward in neutral.
Yes. That's my personal headcanon. Yes. And I've thought that for a long time.
How long would you say you've thought about it?
Since the Bruce Timm episode of the Superman the Animated Series, when everyone thinks Clark's dead because his car has a bomb planted on it to prevent him from exposing a murderous cop or something like that. So there's like a scene where he's like driving along a coastal highway and his car explodes. And for whatever reason, it struck me, because that episode is very much about Clark wanting to make sure that he still has an identity and accomplishments as Clark Kent and not just as Superman. Right. And so I was like, well, if that's important to Clark, it's like then he would need to have a car to drive himself around from time to time. And so he must be doing that in a way that is more Superman-y, earth friendly than a normal human, because he's the best. So
would you prefer that he did that, flew the car, drove the car like that, or cut a hole at the bottom and drive it Flintstone style?
I've always thought that it was him pushing the car from the steering wheel. So I don't need the Flintstone style. I need to make sure that he's done the mechanical work necessary to reinforce the steering column such that he can pull this off.
Now, how does he stop the car?
He just stops flying, I guess. I mean, he can still hit the brakes, right? Your brakes still work when the car's in neutral. Going. No, because if he hits the, I mean, if he stops flying and hits the brakes, the car will stop.
So he's only gas. He's not the brakes.
Unless he needed to be the brakes.
So conceivably, can Superman fly in reverse?
Does this car have a reverse gear if Superman's at the wheel?
Right, that's what I'm asking. So then, theoretically, he could go to like the salt flats and win every race.
Yeah, but why would he?
Because why not?
That's not Clark style.
Contact@fanboy.com. You can write in and get your email on the show like Bionic Dave, and also get your email on the Media Splode show we do every month about non-comics media. But if you're going to do that, please put Media Splode in the title, in the subject line of the email, so we know what it's for. It's plug time. We have a lot of shows going on, as always. We're right in the midst of them. Last month, or October, if you're listening on the day this comes out, it's the last day of October. In October, we had our Media Splode show where we reviewed The Many Saints of Newark and Ted Lasso Season 2.
It made me watch The Many Saints of Newark, so I'm a little annoyed with you on that front.
Why? We said it was not good.
Made me want to go, hey, whoa!
Which it was not a good movie.
Half the dialogue in that movie.
You can't blame us for that. We said it was bad.
I didn't want my prequel spoiled by listening to the episode, so I had to watch it first.
Ryan and I reviewed the first season of What If on the special edition show of the Animation Brain Trust. And Josh, just behind the show, released the latest Talksplode, this one with Tom King. Tom King doing a look back on Strange Adventures and Rorschach and also Heroes in Crisis and talking about Supergirl and all kinds of things. So he's got a lot of big books out lately. This is a note. I can't miss Talksplode. And you can see why Josh had to wait to record that one. But I think it's worth it. And then coming up this month in November, Ryan and Paul and I are going to talk about Injustice, the latest DC Universe animated film, the adaptation of the Tom Taylor comic that was an adaptation of a video game. It's an unending daisy chain of media synergy. And then we'll have a Booksplode review of Avengers Forever, the classic Kurt Busiek, Carlos Pacheco, Kang story. And that'll be sometime this month in November, as well as the Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings special edition, and possibly the Eternals as well as a Media Splode in November. There's a lot of shows in November. One of those might slip to December. I don't know. There's a lot going on.
I haven't seen Shang-Chi or the Eternals. I've still not been to the theater. James Bond is my siren song right now. I'm just like, oh, is James Bond going to get me to the theater?
At an 11 a.m. show with 10 other people in the big theater. So I felt
I was looking at drive-ins around the region. I missed one of the drive-ins like an hour from me was showing it the week before I checked their marquee. So that was frustrating to me. So I'll
I might do the same for Eternals, because I feel like I want to see Chloe Zhao's work on the big screen, but we'll see.
Yeah, I hear you. I do a podcast called Science Sort of, scienceort.com. Check it out. It's scientists talking about science, if that's a thing you care about.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Look around. There's clearly, we live in a society where plenty of people don't, and most of them are in Congress. So
head over to fanboy.com. Topical. Find all of our shows, the shows we just mentioned. We've got a vast history. There's well over 1,000 podcasts you can find at fanboy.com, as well as all the writing we did for years. And Ryan was one of those writers. You can like facebook.com/ifanboy or follow @ifanboy on Twitter or @ifanboycomics on Instagram. That's where you can find out where the pick of the week is before the show comes out. And often on Instagram, we have Best of the Week in panels, although not always, not every week, because sometimes life gets in the way.
I'm going to give you that caption. Just, I'll get it to you.
Follow us individually. C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram and Ryan Haupt on Instagram and Haupt on Twitter. Are you still there? You're still there.
Yeah. I'm not going to let a German clothing brand take over my Twitter handle. There's a German clothing brand called Haupt.
our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. That's where you can keep up to date on the old video show re-uploads that we're doing because of the patrons. And this past week, we had an iFanboy mini show, Pick of the Week on The Sword number 9, which was Ron's Pick of the Week at the time. We had Josh doing a Stumptown interview with Greg Rucka and Matthew Southworth. And there was an anthology show in which I talked about Batman's Batcave trophies and where they came from. And then I believe Ron reviewed Dash Shaw's Body World and Josh reviewed Peter Baggy's Other Lives. So it was a very, very mixed anthology show.
But I mean, come on, think about it.
No one told me I should be reviewing like a big indie book in that one. We didn't coordinate.
If I bought a bunch of these shirts, I wouldn't even have to get them monogrammed because they're already my name. But the shipping costs from Germany, I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah, for sure.
If you dig the show, write a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. People are getting podcasts all over the place these days, Connor. Used to be, iTunes was the one-stop shop for podcasts, but no more,
friends. It's still the majority spot. Apple Podcasts is still the majority place. But
yeah. For a long time, it was like 70%+ of our downloads, but now it's closer to like 50. So it's definitely lost a step. So wherever you get your podcast. And you know what? You can also go on places, even if you don't have to listen to the podcast on Stitcher, to go over to Deezer.com and leave a review there too. So do it.
That's true.
But really, the best way is to tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your children, put it on in the car when people can't escape, and just buy yourself a bunch of flash drives, put all 1,000 episodes on, and then just hand them. Trick or treat is coming up. Hand them out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, for sure.
Dress up as Connor for Halloween, hand out candy to your neighborhood children.
Let's do that.
Spread the word. We don't have a marketing budget. You are our marketing. So go forth and help us. Thank you. Please and thank you.
And that is it for this week's show. Ryan, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Hopefully Josh comes back from assignment.
Yeah, I need to say, Josh, the dead drop, you know where it is. I'll be checking it on Tuesday afternoon. So anything you need to put there for me, make sure it's there by then. We should be good.
He'll be looking for a chalk mark on the wall.
Mm-hmm. If the green light is on and you know which green light I'm talking about, which building, it's Meet Das's building. He just peed on it. And
put the flag in the flower pot.
The crow pecks at midnight, Josh. Don't forget, the crow pecks at midnight.
All right. Until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Ryan. Get boosted.
Target. Don't make me a target. No, don't make me a target.